And we are back with Hysteria.
It's except we're not allowed on Hysteria. We're breaking the rules.
We actually should have you guys on Hysteria.
I've been on Hysteria.
What?
I asked a question at the Outside Lands live show.
Oh, I was there.
Yeah.
What was your question?
Remember I asked about the Meg?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I do remember that.
Yeah. Scanned my way on.
Wow.
But hi, Grace Parra is here.
Hello. I'm so fucking glad to be here, guys.
When
long
Grace
time
Parra
listener
appears, oh, it's just like you're immediately invigorated. It's just like champagne bubbles the person.
I don't do cocaine because I don't know what would happen.
Okay, right.
I think
yeah.
I would just I would explode into lots of little champagne bubbles.
We could fix that though.
That's funny that you say that. When I was on years ago, when I was on Jeopardy, there was I read the YouTube comments on me, and the
would you ever do that?
I know, right? It was a dumb idea. The comment that sticks with me is someone goes, "He's not campy, but he is cokey." That stuck with me. Cokey personality, Louis Purcell.
Cokey, but not campy? See, I think that's a little bit of an insult.
I know.
Have a little bit of camp to you as well.
I'm wearing a Dionne Warwick shirt
right now.
Cokey, our favorite news anchor.
Oh, R.I.P.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a nice tie-in.
Yeah, it was.
That's what I do here.
Okay, yeah.
I tie things in like Alex B. Keaton.
Familially.
I am very happy you're here, Grace.
Oh, I'm
because,
so glad
first
to be
of
here.
All, two things you need to get out of the way.
Let's just do it.
First of all, found out recently on Twitter that you worked on Jonas.
I was a writer. This is my very first professional writing job. I was a writer on Jonas LA, which is the second season of the Jonas Brothers show, starring Nick, Joe, and Kevin Jonas.
Yes.
And the bonus Jonas on occasion when we could have him.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
We had to write him in.
They have the other one.
They have the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jonas Salk, the virologist.
My favorite thing about Jonas is before it was a sitcom about them just being in LA. Well, what was the first season set?
Great premise. I have no idea.
Probably Jersey.
It was weird, right?
Well, the original premise of the show was that it was called J-O-N-A-S.
Correct.
And it was about them being spies.
It stood for Junior Operatives
Networking as Spies.
That's right. That's right.
Jonas. Rarely will an acronym have ass in it. Seems sort of unprofessional.
And you know what? I never saw an episode of the first season of that show. Mm. So I went in to meet with the showrunners and I was
a fraud.
A fraud from the beginning. And it was also my first meeting to meet on a show. I'd just come from doing Writers on the Verge, which is this NBC writers program. And it was a great experience.
Oh,
great experience,
good.
Top to bottom. Amazing first experience because you're sitting around with eight other adults who are like, we are writing for the Jonas Brothers on a Disney show. And we're in the middle of Calabasas somewhere. And we're also shooting at this house in Malibu because the whole thing essentially took place at the Joe Bros house.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's beautiful, beautiful experience. I do remember distinctly one quick anecdote. There was a role that was written for a semi-love interest for Nick. Now, Nick at the time, 16, 17.
Yeah, child.
But very handsome. Mm-hmm. And I whispered that because it feels weird to even say this now.
At the right, time yeah.
I
was like, no, I'm worried for you. Yeah.
The time I was like 23 or 24, whatever. Like,
at the time,
young.
We were young enough to be lusting off the Jonas Brothers.
Absolutely. Okay, thank yeah. you. Thank you. And still are, I think. And so there was this role that was written. And so they had me read it at the table. And afterwards, Nick comes up to me and he's like, you should just do this part. And I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, sure. Thanks, Nick. That's so funny. But I didn't know what to do at the time because I'm a staff writer on the show. Mm-hmm. I can't go up to the showrunners and be like, hey, so Nick wants to like faux kiss me in this episode. That's cool, right? Also, he's 16. So mm-hmm. the whole part of me being like, what does this mean? And why is he doing this? Very strange. Totally inappropriate. Wonderful, though.
I guess also maybe he would then forget it. And then if you brought it up, it seemed like you were, you
exactly,
know.
Exactly. Right. Like I'm the cuckoo bananas
exactly,
one.
Exactly, yeah.
I never said that.
Yeah, exactly.
Who is she?
Who is she? Exactly.
Trapped. Yeah.
Wow. But, I can't believe Nick Jonas tried to set you up.
Like a little bit. But, now, you know, then it's
he was dangerous liaison to you.
Oh, wow. I wish he had that capability. I would watch that.
I would watch that.
Only Kevin has that capability.
A couple years ago now, I punched up for one day a pilot that Grace did that was so funny. She
yes.
was like a Daily Show style show.
Yes.
And you were so authoritative and I'm glad you have a place at Crooked where you get to exercise
yes.
that. But it was so cool to see. And you had
Thank
motherfucking
you.
Barbara Boxer on the
Barbara
show.
Barbara Boxer, Santi Gold was our...
Guys, it was incredibly legitimate.
It was very... Well, Lewis was fucking genius, so brilliant. All of his jokes are just... I was like, yes, 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 yes.
I have finally got someone on the show to talk to me about Succession.
Yes, yes, I'm a huge fan.
I actually just randomly catch an episode the other day. It is addictive. I just need to watch the whole thing.
Wait, brilliant. Like a pilot? Or?
No, it was an episode with Holly Hunter, so it might have just been the most recent episode.
Yes,
yeah, she's in the second season.
And Sherry Jones.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, Jeannie Berlin from The Heartbreak Kid is on this show. What am I doing not watching this? Anyway.
You'll love it.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan.
It is... Dynasty written by straight men, but but weirdly very entertaining.
It's unbelievably entertaining. It is funny. It is dark. It's masochistic.
There's people are constantly doing drugs on it.
Uh-huh. Right.
People are constantly telling each other to fuck off on it. Everyone is a horrible human being.
All of them are horrible. They all have weird sexual proclivities.
Yeah.
Also, Kendall on that show, to me, looks like what Don Draper would look like in real life. You know, just like that kind of glum, like a real macabre sort of sadness about it all.
Well, yeah, in the 60s, you sort of would idolize someone like Don. And I feel like Mad Men did for a few seasons before we switched to Peggy's perspective and realized Don was trash. But from the beginning, you feel bad. I still root for Kendall.
Oh, me too. Absolutely.
And I know that he's a miserable human.
I think that Logan roots for him too. I know that Logan roots for him too.
Well, I felt like really emotional in my heart this week when he defended Roman when Logan slapped him.
Yes.
It's a good episode.
Roman is Kieran Culkin.
Yes.
I've come around on him. I thought he was the weakest actor at first. And now in the episode I saw, he's sort of sunk into this douchebag role, really living it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's one of my favorite. I mean, he's no Tom and Greg, of course.
I think I'm ready. Gregory,
I'm so sorry. We've evolved.
I think I'm ready for Culkisance.
And by the way, what's his aunt, Bonnie Bedelia, up to?
I didn't
Fun
know
fact,
that.
Die Hard fans.
Yeah. Hanging out with her sister, Amelia.
You would love an Amelia Bedelia reference.
There's like a secret ping every time I mention Amelia Bedelia on this show.
She takes things too literally. That's her thing.
I guess we should start this show.
Oh, all right.
I guess.
The Creative Arts Emmys happened.
Oh, yes.
And the show that I was in, Emmy nominated, once again, lost.
I see that for you.
An Emmy for Megan.
Right.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Big fan of Megan Amber.
Yeah. I was in season two, just like I was in season one, and lost again.
Can I tell you my pitch for what her season three should be?
Just starring me.
Just starring Ira.
Right, right.
And also called A Megan for Emmy, where she tries to become the next Emmy host, because we haven't had one in a while. What do you think?
She's somebody who likes to lean into a gag that's already gone on too long. So she should actually do a very high budget thing somehow. Where it's like a variety spectacular.
Yeah. I feel like the only way to fully lean into that would be if like Netflix picked up an Emmy for Megan.
Right.
Yes.
And it just became an actual show.
By the way, we should reiterate what this is.
Yes,
Megan Amram,
yes.
who is a Simpsons writer, has written on a whole bunch of shows. Randomly decided one day that she deserved an Emmy. So she came up with a web series where she just films herself doing the bare minimum to get an Emmy, essentially.
Yeah.
And she's gotten nominated both years.
Yeah.
But I believe she lost in the actress category to Christina Pickles last year, a name I like to think about. And then this year she lost in two categories again. So now the gag will continue, I assume.
Yes.
It must.
Well, she is in good company because someone else lost this week. And I flooded a certain CBS late night host's Twitter mentions with bees because of it.
First of all, happy 14th birthday to you. Oh, yeah. So homecoming lost to what? Carpool Karaoke or something?
Yes.
Oh. You know what?
And at first, when
again?
Yes.
Well, how could that happen again?
I don't know. Wait, no. Lemonade lost to Adele
at
the Grammys. And
I feel like Carpool Karaoke beat something serious before. Anyway, I apologize. I don't have that right.
And I just, maybe it beat Megan last year.
Probably.
It's just like, first of all, I looked at it and I was like expecting Beyonce Homecoming to have won. And then it says Carpool Karaoke with James Corden. And I was like, I hope it don't sound ridiculous. I don't know who this man is. I could be walking down the street. I wouldn't know a thing. Sorry to this man.
Gloria Vertel, my mother. What's happening here?
Have you heard of
Ira
memes?
Is quoting a meme. Yes.
Kiki Palmer.
Kiki Palmer.
It is wonderful, though.
Yeah. I didn't realize that was about that man.
I didn't realize that was about Dick Cheney until a few hours ago. And that makes it even spicier.
The
even
way she
spicier.
Is pointing at the picture, too, like, I don't know.
Sorry to this man. It's beautiful because I love how you watch a meme be birthed in real time.
Yes.
First, there was the video from her Vanity Fair interview where she was strapped to a lie detector and being asked questions. And she was asked if she knew who Dick Cheney was and said no. And then the lie detector says, she's being truthful. And that was the first clip that was online. And then it was clipped down to just the sorry to this man part. And then it became a meme. So if you've only seen that, you have no idea that she was talking about Dick Cheney.
No idea.
And you have no idea that she was doing it while strapped to a lie detector.
No, I had no context.
Yeah.
I like that, though, sometimes.
Of course.
Less context? Who needs context?
It's weird that she hasn't wandered into memedom before. Kiki Palmer, to me, is almost 100% sound bites.
Yes.
And facial expressions that are, like, punchy. You know?
Yeah. I mean, when she talked on Watch What Happens Live about the meme, she said, yes. And I oop out loud.
Right.
She's a meme. She's a walking meme.
She's like if Ira did his work well. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Quoted memes in a sort of organic way that
do
made.
Do you guys know what oop means? Speaking of out of context, what oop or ooping is?
I assume it was just, you know, like what Betty Boop does in the bedroom.
She might, actually. So ooping, I heard this a few years ago. This is something that's related to the era of, this is so gross. You take a tampon.
Here we go.
And you insert it into alcohol and you insert it into yourself. That's ooping. So in other words, it's getting drunk via tampon.
Oh, I see. Right.
Yeah. So every time I see or hear and I oop, I always think,
That to me sounds like it's like in the era of rainbow parties.
That's you know, what I meant. That's
like,
what I was
going to... rumors you would hear about like what the teens are doing.
Yes, you know?
I just laced my Truvada with ketamine.
Goes down easy.
And listen to some Santi Gold with some Four Loko. Having never had any Four Loko, I just assume it is at the level of like ketamine.
I would describe it as
intensity.
A pungent drink.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's gross.
It sounds gross.
It's definitely gross. I love how it's not just me and Lewis again, but we are already off the rails.
Of course. Yeah.
We have spent 20 minutes talking about whatever.
But we did summarize the whole internet this week.
We did.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Yeah.
Go us for not having lives.
This has been The Internet with Ira and Lewis. We have a fantastic show for you all.
Mm.
Every time I say that, I sound like I'm on SNL.
Right.
Yeah. Which is appropriate because we're talking about SNL this week. We will also be talking about Felicity Huffman and her fortnight in prison.
Second-rate Judith Light, Felicity Huffman. No, actually, I am a fan of her acting, unfortunately.
We're also going to talk about Hustlers, the film of the year, the century.
Oscar buzz.
And we have an interview with Ezra Koenig from Vampire Weekend.
And my former Columbia classmate.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh.
How fortuitous that you were here.
Fortuitous.
We'll be right back. Live from Crooked Media, we're talking about SNL.
Good segue.
Is Jane Curtin still on? No? No wonder I haven't caught
up. Lewis lost interest.
Yeah. I'm just tuning in for Janine Garofalo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that season very vividly.
Do you remember The Truth About Cats and Dogs? Great movie.
Oh, yeah. Janine Garofalo was a good actress.
Yes.
I loved her on Larry Sanders.
Yeah.
She did what she had to do.
She did.
Last week, the show made history, though, for casting their first full-time Chinese-American cast member, our friend Bowen Yang.
Yay, Bowen.
Your friend, too, Grace? Do you know
I've only met him, like, once, but I'm a huge fan of his.
Oh, yeah.
His Miranda Priestly lip-sync video.
Oh, yeah.
I could watch that.
Now that I realize I've brought this up on Keep It Before, he does these lip-sync videos.
Yes.
He did Miranda Priestly once. He did Tyra Banks.
He did Sandra Oh.
Yeah.
And what's beautiful about it, too, is I feel like it jump-started everyone trying to do lip sync videos.
Sure. Right, right.
And then, of course, he got SNL because he's fantastic and he's hilarious and also has La Culturistas,
which
we both been on.
And Matt, I have not been on La Culturistas.
Didn't you do I Don't Think So, Honey?
Oh, yes. Pardon me. That was it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That counts. he did that. He does that podcast with Matt Rogers, a friend of ours, who has been on Keep It also.
Yes, but our excitement was quickly ruined when another person they cast, Shane Gillis, was recently outed as a racist.
Yes.
Can we call it that? Some people are calling his racist comments edgy jokes.
Provocative. He's a provocateur.
Watch out, Milo. footage of his podcast, Matt and Shane's secret podcast.
Moving right along.
Just going to leave that alone. Was posted to Twitter by entertainment journalist Seth Simons last Thursday. In it, Shane, when discussing New York's Chinatown, is heard, "Let the fucking C word live there." And the C word, of course, is the slur that people use for Asian people.
It's a term he comes back to again and again, too.
Again and again. Mm-hmm. Following outrage online, Shane issued a fake-ass apology.
Via notes.
Actually, can you read that entire apology? Do you have it with you right now?
Yes. "I'm a comedian who pushes boundaries. I sometimes miss. If you go through my 10 years of comedy, most of it bad, you're going to find a lot of bad misses. I'm happy to apologize to anyone who's actually offended by anything I've said. My intention is never to hurt anyone, but I'm trying to be the best comedian I can be, and sometimes that requires risks."
95% of that is self-congratulating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just part of the job, how good I am at ruining your day with my weird racist comments.
I'm a comedian. I try hard. This is what happens, guys.
Imagine also, if you got fired from something, and or imagine if you fired somebody from a job and they responded with, "Well, you know, I did have to break the rules in order to do this job." It's like, no, you didn't. Stop that.
It's like
you're
a
lying.
Job interview when somebody asks you what your biggest flaw is, and you're like, "I just try so hard. I just care too much."
Right, right.
That's what
right.
that is.
The weirdest thing about it, too, is, of course, there were people defending his comedy, but it wasn't comedy.
There was no joke attached
no
to
jokes.
It.
No jokes.
He's literally just saying, like, "I fucking hate Chinese people."
Yes. Yes.
And then he was like, "I fucking hate gay people, too." So
I fucking hate Jewish people,
yeah,
too.
So,
I mean,
so what was the point? There were no jokes. There wasn't being edgy. It was just someone being racist. And because they
are glib.
Yes. And because they are a comedian and because they were doing it on a podcast, people were really stretching to pretend that it was all a joke.
That he was playing a character of some kind. If you listen to the whole thing, guys, from start to end, then you'll understand that he's just playing a character. It's part of it. That's not a character. That's just him. That's clearly just him. And also, we've been talking about this in particular, this case in particular, as though it happened 10, 15 years ago. It happened less than a year ago.
Correct.
And 2 months prior,
yeah.
he used the same slur to describe Andrew Yang.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and now they're having some dialogue on Twitter.
We'll get to that.
Awesome.
We'll get to that in a fucking minute.
But what's crazy to me is part of the backlash to the backlash is there are people saying, yeah, as you just said, Grace, you're digging up these tweets. First of all, I did not know who he was more than before I heard about this story. So naturally, people like me who are into comedy, watch comedy, would want to look up what he does.
Yes.
So
yeah.
his podcast is his premier format, right?
Right, that's
what
him.
He does.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to simply educate yourself on who he was, you would have to encounter this material.
Right.
So it's not like you're digging up anything. It's right there. It's mm-hmm. It's his selling point.
It's like us getting cast in something and someone's like, "Oh, maybe I should check out Keep It."
Right,
yeah.
exactly.
They'd be like, "Don't go there. Why are you digging up his podcast released weekly?"
Right.
You're trying to stir up drama.
That I used to get attention for myself. Yeah.
But now I am happy with what SNL now has done.
Yeah, they fired him.
They fired him. Yes.
And I was surprised, mm-hmm. honestly. I thought that enough people over the weekend were coming to his defense where, you know, there was this idea that cancel culture is getting out of control.
Yep.
And Lewis, you know, called it before consequence culture.
Yeah.
And it's brought to mind the idea that everyone who says, quote unquote, cancel culture is rampant ignores the fact that people have gotten fired for things like this for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not just because Twitter exists and it's 2019.
Nope.
You know, Michael Richards, remember when he said nigger a bunch of times?
Yeah.
And had backlash to that. Like, people have been fired for saying heinous things before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's
and they've received backlash, and it just seems more prominent now because you're on your timeline and you keep looking at tweets where everybody's talking about it.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also something particular about this case where, because people can kind of predict that there will be an intense focus on a new SNL hire's past tweets and past work, it almost feels like an inevitable narrative. Oh, well, we found something. But this is nothing like, for instance, Melissa Villaseñor in years past, when she got hired, there were some tweets of hers or comments of hers that people maybe interpreted as, I don't know, sloppy. They are nothing compared to
nothing.
This.
Or so nothing.
Even it's Michael Che's, to be honest.
Yeah,
Michael,
yeah,
like,
right.
His tweets weren't great, but they were nothing compared to this.
Right.
But I will say that it is shocking to see the people that are running to his defense, and in major platforms, too. I don't know if you guys are fans of David Spade's, but you can't see my sarcasm, my sarcastic eyes.
I watched every episode of Just Shoot Me.
Oh, Just
Can
Shoot
we
Me.
Can we say iconic?
This is a pro-Wendy Malick podcast.
Yeah. Just Shoot Me is amazing. I do love me a Wendy Malick, but he has this new show called Lights Out on Comedy Central, right. And he had Bill Burr and Jim Jeffries on last night to talk about this particular case. And man, did those three jump to Shane's defense and say—
All three.
All three. And cancel culture is terrible. What's happening? Millennials, you guys are just rats. That's a direct quote from Bill Burr. Which, by
Working
the way—
Working on like, behalf of whom?
I have no idea. I have okay. no idea.
I'd love to be a rat. You know, they are beautiful chefs in Disney movies.
That's exactly Ratatouille right. is a brilliant film. But it was crazy that we're not just seeing this now on social media. We're seeing this on television, too. And Comedy Central gave that was their response. The response to the firing, which happened yesterday, was Comedy Central gave these three straight, middle-aged white men this platform to talk about how shitty it is that Shane no longer has a career.
Right.
Without offering the defense.
It is this insistence that he was telling jokes.
Yes, yes.
This insistence that you have to be edgy in comedy. And I just do not get any sort of reasoning for doing that. And I'm also just questioning these comedians. Like, yeah. Would you do that? Like, would you go up and say, like, faggot a bunch of times and think, oh, that's me being funny?
Right.
It's always the people who love, like, this recent Dave Chappelle special or whatever that we talked about, are like, oh, you know, you have to push boundaries. You people are doing the same thing to him that you tried to do to Dave Chappelle. There is also the fact that Dave Chappelle is funny.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like the new special, but he is a funny person. And we dislike the special mostly because it seemed like a comedian later in their life trying to shock just for attention.
Right.
But he also has a breath of a career to look back on where you're like, you had to get to that point to be offensive for shock value, right? Mm-hmm. If you're just being offensive now before anyone knows who the fuck you are, what is the point?
You got to earn it.
Yeah.
You have to earn it. I agree completely.
And it seems almost calculated in a way, especially considering his statement when he was fired. Shane tweeted, "It feels ridiculous for comedians to be making serious public statements, but here we are." I'm sorry. Fuck you. Isn't that what comedians do?
Yes.
Comment on society?
Also, just being a comedian doesn't absolve you from having to be sincere ever.
Yeah. I'm a comedian who was funny enough to get on SNL. That can't be taken away. It was literally taken
literally
away.
Literally was. Yeah. Good job.
Of course, I wanted an opportunity to prove myself at SNL, but I understand it would be too much of a distraction. I respect the decision they made. I'm honestly grateful for the opportunity. I was always a Mad TV guy anyway, because he wanted to play Miss Swan.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Clearly.
He will be battling Scarlett Johansson for that role.
It seems calculated because we're now in an era where any generic white guy can have a comedy special called Triggered, and they can tour everywhere, and people will pay to see them because they feel like they're battling PC culture. Mm-hmm. And you can make a shit ton of money in touring, you know? It's not going to be being on SNL. It's not going to be in movies and TV shows, probably, like he assumed. Mm-hmm. But that guy who hosted the VMAs.
Oh, yes. Sebastian.
Yeah.
Maniscalco.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. He is one of the highest paid stand-up comedians. We don't know who the fuck he is.
No.
But he's touring and making money, and he has a fan base. And I feel like, give him a few months' time, Shane will probably be opening for Louis C.K. somewhere, and he will continue raking in the money because, oh, it pays to be a fucking asshole.
Well, also, by the way, make me laugh one time, dude. I'm sorry, I didn't look through any of this footage and find your rad comedy.
You know, I actually saw a clip, a totally separate from this, of some stand-up that he was doing, and it was him talking about how people who were not standing up for having voted for Trump were pussies, and then he did a bit about vaginas. Mm. So he took that word literally, and I guess that's clever. and it was not funny, not engaging. It was not racist. I'll give him that. It wasn't racist. So there's that.
Yeah.
But I took a little bit of time to try to figure out what it was. And I'm because it's a big deal to get hired by SNL, and I still am trying to understand how that happened. I wonder, is SNL,
because you have to be so good as an Asian American like Bowen to get cast.
Yes,
but
and you can be so mediocre.
Any generic white guy can get cast on SNL.
Do you think he was cast because he represents Middle America, because he represents red states, and because now that is a minority, if you will?
I just think Lorne Michaels likes to hire, you know, some average-looking white guy every season. I remember when the announcement came through, before I even knew his comedy, I was like, oh yeah, Bowen, I'm happy for him. Chloe Fetterman, I've seen her videos online before. I think she's very funny. And Shane Gillis, I was like, okay, you hired, you know, an Asian, a woman, but make sure you get a new white guy in the cast,
because
you are severely lacking in white guys who are straight at SNL.
Yeah.
Also, so those three comedians, I'm still blown away. Just bringing to his defense on principle, even though it has nothing to do with the quality of his comedy.
Rob Schneider did the same thing today.
No, by the way.
And then backpedaled.
If you end up in a debate with, if you end up on the same side as Rob Schneider about your comedy, I mean, truly, it's time to move back to the Midwest and become a bookseller. <It's over. laughs> No offense to the Midwest or bookseller. I was there once.
I worked at Barnes & Noble in Milwaukee.
Yes.
Mayfair Mall.
Love it.
I think Norm even defended him briefly.
Yeah.
I don't know if he backpedaled as well. But the worst defense of him was Andrew Yang.
Oh, Andrew.
Andrew Yang.
Who will still be at these debates. And you know how everybody stands, like, if you're the most popular, you're in the middle. And if you're less popular on the sides, he's in about the Pacific Ocean. Okay.
He tweeted, Shane, I prefer comedy that makes people think and doesn't take cheap shots, but I'm happy to sit down and talk with you if you'd like. We would benefit from being more forgiving rather than punitive. What the fuck?
Yang gang.
You are running for fucking president. You won't be president, but you're ostensibly busy running a presidential campaign, and you want to sit down with someone who was fired from SNL? What the fuck is wrong with you?
I mean, it's what he's doing is clinging to anybody who has he can tie himself to.
Of course, please talk about me.
Yep.
Because then he was on CNN State of the Union talking about how I've experienced a lot of anti-Asian racism throughout my upbringing, and it hurts. You making self-mocking jokes at the recent debate, talking about how you're Asian, so you know a lot of doctors and you're good at math. You know, it's that concept of I'm making fun of myself to make white people feel better about being around a person of color.
Right. Not furthering the needle.
No, not furthering the needle. And now you want to sit down with a fucking racist to do what?
All of our presidential candidates are spending too much time on Twitter. Can I just say that?
Yeah, right.
You wouldn't know this if you didn't spend any time on Twitter. Yeah, maybe if you watch cable news, you'd catch a glimpse of it. But
I'm sure Fox News has probably raged about
for
this.
For sure.
But I feel like the general public who's going to be watching SNL this season has no idea any of this happened.
Yeah.
It was
thank God they don't. Too many people know about this. Too many people. It's like Caroline Calloway. Too many people knew about that story. Too many people.
That scamming white heifer.
Oh, God.
What a boring story.
I have to say, okay, about that story, we are not going to get into the Caroline Calloway story.
No.
Which was at the cut, and it's a long story about an Instagram narcissist and a friend who followed her around, and her life was eventually ruined.
Who she used, like, Jenny Humphrey to apparently write her Instagram captions for.
Yes.
Right. Usually in a scammer story, there's an X factor about the scammer that makes it intriguing. But she really was just a run-of-the-mill Instagram, loser.
Yeah.
You know, who had nothing to say. It didn't grab me the way I expected it to based on the reaction it got.
I felt like Derek Barry in that Stonewall video where he thinks that people died at Stonewall. He's like, nobody died. I'm like, I read this Caroline Calloway story. I'm like, so nobody's dead?
Right.
There's not like a Theranos level scandal where like, yes, like there's no cult. There's no people in danger of maybe dying. There's no stolen money. There's no people trapped on an island with mayonnaise sandwiches.
Yeah.
Like watch a fucking episode of Melrose Place.
I would say that
article, then do a scam.
That article name drops the movie Ingrid Goes West, and it's just it's exactly that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, go watch that movie. Yeah,
except Ingrid shot someone.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stakes. There's just no stakes in the story.
No stakes. I think.
You know where there were stakes? Jonas L.A. Season 2.
My friend. A former colleague Molly Lambert tweeted recently. She said, the Caroline Calloway story on the cut has already dropped down to number 5 beneath a story about skincare. it went away very quickly.
Yes, it was well written. It just was not super intriguing.
Yeah.
To get back quickly to...
Probably well edited.
I bet. To get back to the story quickly, you know what? A line that keeps coming up, and people like David Spade are likely to say this sort of thing is, you know, well, comedy is very important during this time, et cetera. And you're defending an institution of comedy when you're defending these people. How about comedy is not that important?
Yeah.
So if you're going to be a complete fuck up, go away.
Yeah.
We only need like 9 comedians. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've outsourced joy and laughter to Twitter and Instagram, unfortunately. So we don't really need that many pros.
When we have Kiki Palmer popping in with memes that are gold every day.
I laugh. Yes.
That makes me laugh.
See?
Yeah.
Well, you know, as the star of Rules of Engagement missed... There is also this insistence that comedians are in the same field as regular, like, writers. And I get, like, comedians can be writers, but a stand-up is not the same thing as, say, like, Stephen King or Tarantino using the N-word in their movies.
Nor are they at the same level as journalists. There are occasionally people like that, like Jon Stewart. Mm-hmm. If you are Jon Stewart, then you have to identify yourself not just as a comedian, but you have to understand the cultural impact that you have. But that's a rare case. Most comedians also are not intellectuals. Not that they can't be, that they're not smart, but they're not just, you know, publicly perceived as such.
Yes, and there's just this idea that they are so... persecuted, that they really have to cling to the idea that cancel culture is destroying people's lives left and right. I cannot think of anyone who has actually had their life fucking ruined by cancel culture. Maybe Weinstein, he still has a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey's doing like fucking poetry in Rome somewhere. And
he's also,
by the way, criminals.
Yeah. Sean Spicer's doing the fucking cha-cha slide.
Oh, Jesus.
On Dancing with the Stars. Who got canceled?
Right. It's just, no.
Lot's wife?
I agree. My pre-keep it is Sean Spicer. That's Sean Spicer, Jeff from last night, by the way.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that.
Oh, God.
Fucking villain from Ghostbusters. The one who stomped through the city.
Oh, Stay Puffed? Yeah. Stay Puffed Spicer.
Oh, yeah. Marshmallow Man.
Anyway, really looking forward to not reading about Andrew Yang's sit-down with Shane Gillis.
Mm-hmm.
Because who cares?
They're going to live stream it. They're going to live stream it.
They are going to. Someone is going to milk everything out of this meeting. I would hope that people online wouldn't share the photo and try and dunk on them and make jokes and make it a bigger story than it should be.
Yeah.
But we know the internet. I've seen it up close and personal.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up next, Ezra Koenig from Vampire Weekend.
Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to journalists, politicians, experts, comedians, and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vietor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vietor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that.
Sound,
I'm deeply
doesn't
stupid.
Doesn't sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with Grace's close personal friend, Ezra Koenig.
And fellow Columbia Lion.
That's right.
Yes.
We don't talk about Columbia on this show.
Do we not?
I went to Tisch.
Oh.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, my sister went to Tisch.
Oh. Mm.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Is there some rivalry there?
I don't have a lot of Columbia loyalty. I enjoyed college well enough, but I have no affection really for the institution itself. Like,
no.
Oh, one of the homes I've lived in. No, it was a school.
Yeah.
Right.
It was New York. I have affiliation, you know, an affection for New York.
Oh, yeah, sure. Of course.
Yeah.
How brave.
Very excited you're here. I'm excited that you DM'd me after I called your album, Father of the Bride, White Excellence.
Oh, that meant so much to me. I was so excited.
There are very few things that I would classify that, by the way, too. I feel like Dead to Me.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Stranger Things.
Succession.
Season one.
Succession.
And Succession.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
So. The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah.
Oh, so,
yeah.
That's my favorite movie of all time.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah. I can't believe I just nailed that. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Cate Blanchett, looking very tan, is right behind you on that wall. Yeah.
But I wanted to ask, because of that, you have a song called Unbearably White.
That's right.
On the album.
Yeah.
And it just made me think about, there was a review years ago, and I think an editor of mine, an old editor from MTV News, had written and apologized for, where she talked about how your band was just a bunch of white dudes.
Yeah.
But Rawson was in the band then.
Right.
Yeah. And so it wasn't true. But now, it's just white guys.
Yeah. Now, so now they could write the article.
Yeah.
Well, but also, it depends how you define the band, too. It's because, you know, not everybody, a lot of people work on the album or important creative collaborators, even perform with us. So, you know.
True.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steve Lacy.
Steve Lacy, yeah.
Yes, from the internet.
MVP of the album. Yeah, yeah. He just played with us in New York.
Yeah. What's it like writing for, I guess, other people now?
Well, you know, we collaborate. I mean, so there's a bunch of songs with Danielle Haim on the record, and I just really wanted to write duets.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just felt like, you know, as a songwriter, you're always kind of looking for new challenges, and I think especially coming from whatever you want to call the Vampire Weekend world, we kind of started in this funny place where of kind of like abstraction and, you know, I don't know. So for me, there's some real novelty in doing what most good songwriters do from the start, which is like write songs that have a setting and people talking to each other. Because I've been in the situations here and there where people really sit down, groups of songwriters, and they're like, before they, you know, pick up a guitar or start making a beat or something, like, what's this about? Like, let's talk about the big ideas. Whereas I was a little more just like, you know, writing like myself little notes and stuff like that, you know, kind of coming up with cool turns of phrases, you know, like starting with a phrase unbearably white and thinking like, what does that really mean? You know, and working backwards. But so writing for somebody else is fun because, especially in a duet, it's kind of like, who are these two people? Why are they together? And again, this is like songwriter 101, but it was novel for me in my early 30s.
No, I mean, not many people would name songs like Oxford Comma.
Right.
Or like have their album called Contra, which I always liked, but it always sort of felt like I was deciphering something listening to the albums. And this one just feels very relaxed. And, you know, you talked about how you were sort of inspired by Kacey Musgraves.
Sure.
You know, how you could listen to her songs and notice from the beginning, like, what it's about.
Right. Well, yeah, I saw her at the Greek Theater. And I mean, I'd already had this, like, larger interest in country music. It always kind of, like, loomed for me. My dad was a fan.
You mentioned Loretta Lynn in another interview, too.
Yeah, because there's those great duets from that era. But I did have this, you know, again, these are the
realizations of an incredibly naive person. But I went with Ariel, who one of our producers, and we saw Casey at the Greek Theater. Mm-hmm. And I just had this thought. Again, like, I've been familiar with country music. I've been a fan my whole life. But you know when somebody takes you to see a show and you don't know the music, mm-hmm. it can be like a profoundly alienating experience, mm-hmm. especially in some, maybe what we've been classified as in like the broader sense of like indie. Like if you don't know the songs, and it's, especially if it's like noisy and you're mm-hmm. just like, what am I even listening to? It's all distorted. And then there's something really pleasant about like listening. And also it's just a good mix and her band is sick. But just like listening and be kind of like, I'm actually hearing the song in real time and I'm thinking about it and you're introducing me to the meaning of the song. And I just kind of realized there aren't too many other shows I'd been to where I was kind of like learning the songs and thinking about them all at the same time.
Recently, I saw Mitski and I had never listened to her before.
Yeah.
A friend was like, I have an extra ticket. I love her. You're going to love her. And I went and I did.
Oh, great.
Well, Casey Musgraves is also, I guess, a kind of rare person now where if you listen to two songs in a row, you have gotten to know her. You know what I mean? Like, she's like introducing you formally to her. Also, on this album, you wrote with Hans Zimmer. First of all,
we didn't write together.
I was going to say, first of all, glad he's getting work. I was wondering when he would get prolific. But talk about the process of putting together your work with his work.
Well, we just sampled him. It's from the soundtrack to The Thin Red Line, which is a really beautiful soundtrack. And that it's a song. It's one of the songs of Danielle that kind of had this, a little bit of this country flavor. It's one of those duets I was talking about. And it had something in common with the chord progression from this bit of music from The Thin Red Line that I was always familiar with. And it kind of felt like, that seemed like a good way to start an album, just like acoustic guitar and pedal steel, and because I knew Vampire Weekend fans would just be like, what the fuck is this? And then just like, you know, real like hard cut into the big Hans Zimmer with the choir, you know?
Yeah.
Well, even speaking about like Vampire Weekend fans, you know, how do you feel they've changed since, you know, your first album? Because you know, you so much, very much like a preppy sort of band and had that vibe, and now you've matured, you have a kid, you know, have you seen a sort of change in your audience, or have you just sort of seen your audience grow up with you?
We've definitely seen a lot of people grow up with us, and that's been very meaningful when you get notes from people saying stuff like, you know, I was in high school or college or whatever when your first album came out, and I remember when the second and the third, I was going through some shit in my late 20s, and then now I'm married. See, we get notes like that all the time where you kind of feel like you're on a journey with somebody. And also, you know, that's the hope. It can be like very confusing, especially in music where so many of the best ideas and work comes from young people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of how it's set up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as you get older, the idea that you could still make work that feels exciting, but also, you know, dignified or something, and that your fans are along for the ride, that feels really good. But then you also get the funny phenomenon of meeting fans at shows or other places who are like, I've been listening to you guys for 10 years. And you're always like, how old are you? And they're like, 14. And then you're kind of like, what? And they're like, so I've seen that a little bit where it's like, oh, my parents used to play your first album all the time. And when you run the math, it makes sense. But there's still a part of me that's like, oh, isn't that like, shouldn't I be like 60 then? but like, all right, cool.
I'll be honest. I was surprised to realize how old Horchata is now. I can't believe I've known that song.
Yeah.
That long.
Yeah. Actually, somebody just texted me. It came out almost exactly 10 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
Unacceptable, frankly. Can we keep it at 5? Yeah.
Time plus.
Can we go to years ago, Grace?
Columbia?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Take us there.
God. I mean, I was blacked out for a lot of it, performing improv in tiny basements, but I do remember.
Yeah.
So I hosted a radio show called Dave and Dave in the Morning with Hector and Grace that had neither Dave nor Dave. It was me and my friend Hector. Mm-hmm. And so because we're kind of like in the scene of radio things, they asked us to host a number of like music-related events on campus, including Battle of the Bands. And I think that Hector and I hosted the first Battle of the Bands.
That sounds right. That
Vampire
was
Weekend.
Sponsored by the engineering school.
Sponsored by SEAS. Yes. School of Applied and Engineering Sciences. Yes.
Yeah, I love that it was the engineering school. which we came in third out of fourth.
That's right. I do remember that.
Yeah. That was literally our first show.
That's right. That's wild.
You did as well as a reform candidate in a presidential election.
Yeah, congrats.
or like Beyonce on Star Search.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh,
she, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, which she reminded us of. Mm-hmm. And flawless.
It's girls' time.
Yes,
girls' time. Girls' time.
Speaking of, you are one of the credited writers on Hold Up.
Yeah.
And I know that you were recently talking about how you got into the idea of collaborating on like pop music, like, and one of the things that helped was like this camp you went to for Kanye.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they would call it a camp, but I was there.
Someone called it a camp
in a big house in Mexico with a lot of people coming and going. So.
What's that even like? Like, how do you even get approached for that? And then what's it like arriving there and being like, I've been summoned to help create a big album.
It was through one of his managers at the time, and we'd met once or twice, so it seemed like he knew something about Vampire Weekend. I remember meeting him when our first album came out, and he said like, "Oh yeah, I have your album." I was like, "All right, cool." No commentary beyond that.
Nice.
So we'd met once or twice, and you know, of course, it was exciting to roll up. I was lucky when I got there. My friend Dave from Dirty Projectors was there, so I actually knew one person. But, you know, it's cool. It was like a house, and his family was there. And, you know, there's one day me and Dave were eating breakfast at the table, and, like, Kim came and, you know, just chatted and stuff. So it was actually very relaxed. I think that's why the phrase camp sometimes implies, like, just flying all these people to Sweden and the artist isn't even there, and just, like, you know, making them get to work. You know, there's kind of, like, a weird association. This really seemed like, you know, somebody with their family in a house setting up a studio and working. And, you know, they'd play stuff for us and give us something. Do you have any idea for this? And go work on something, then come back and play it. And then you'd watch, like, a lot of discussion. There was this song that we started working on that... Yeah, I always talk about it with Dave. It was almost like a country song, actually. So I remember like coming back to present it, and I was like kind of nervous. And then like I remember Kanye kind of liked it, and then Big Sean was there, and they were like talking about the lyrics and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is cool.
Are you eventually just gonna make a country album?
I wonder. I mean, I think I really think that country songwriting is you know, it's just like one of the pillars of like American songwriting, you know? And so I kind of think anybody who's like really into songwriting eventually finds something that speaks to them in that world.
Lil Nas X. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly.
Found at 19.
I mean, yeah, because country music, it's Southern music. Like almost all American music comes from the South.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Do you feel like an obligation to spend some time in the South? You're from New York, right?
Yeah.
So do you feel like to capture a certain genre that's almost geographically specific, like country, that requires spending time in a certain area? Or maybe that's something that you've done in past albums, too, just to get the kind of feel of a geography.
Well, I guess the answer would be no. Although I do, we just toured through the South and we had a lot of great shows, so I like it. I mean, I guess my feeling is if when people think of country music, they think of like, you know, cowboy boots and cowboy hats and something specific. That's one thing. I mean, I always think too, like with country music.
I think of women wanting to shoot their husbands.
Oh yeah, there's a lot
of Carrie Underwood, that music video, yeah.
I mean, and maybe it's just because I'm a music nerd, but I think it's also important to recognize, you know, country music, sometimes people picture, and obviously Lil Nas X, these ideas have been challenged a lot. You know, country music, the roots of it aren't just like white people in cowboy hats. It's also black music, of course, being one of the fundamental bases of it. And then also, like, this is my true music nerd, but also Hawaiian music. People forget about that, you know, this idea of the pedal steel guitar, that comes from Hawaiian guitar.
That's right.
Woo! You know, that kind of like, so the sound that's so associated with the American South, really at its origin is Hawaiian. So I think there's something about country music that's like, it's very much associated with a place, but really it's a combination of a lot of different cultures and music and just strong songwriting. So I always think about like, you know, like it makes more sense for me being like, you know, a Northeastern Jewish person, like Leonard Cohen looms very large as like a cultural figure. And then in his songs, he sings about how much he loves Hank Williams and sees, you know, that as being one of his big inspirations. So that's, I like that. Just like that idea of great songwriting kind of transcending place a bit.
Ever since somebody mentioned Loretta Lynn, I have now had that duet with Conway Twitty, Louisiana Woman, Mississippi Man stuck in my head. If you don't know
great song.
It,
oh, no, I know
that song.
Yes. We get together every time we can.
Yeah. It's rollicking. Here's a question I just have about songwriting in general. Mm. Okay, so, like, I am a joke writer.
Yeah.
In order to be successful, I basically have to make myself laugh. Yeah. Laughing is almost exhausting.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Is it exhausting to have to move yourself? To sort of, you know, transport yourself, to bring yourself to a place where you feel like, oh, I've actually, you know, expressed a poetic thing in my music.
It's, well, I bet you feel the same way. It's exhausting, but it's also, it's so terrifying when you don't have that feeling. I don't know if you have, if you're like writing jokes and you're like, is this funny? It's not making, and then you finally come up with something that cracks you or your friends up. So I think in the studio, you have to be such a ruthless editor. And there's been times, you know, it's kind of why our albums take a while, but there's been times when I've wondered or I've been talking to somebody and they're like, are you being too hard on yourself? Like, would you have to like overthink every little thing? Mm-hmm. And then every time we actually put music out into this, you know, crazy world, I'm like, no, you have to be super prepared at all times. You can work incredibly, it could be like one of the best things you ever made. And just so somebody else can be like, kind of like, yeah, okay, doesn't suck. You know, that's, I guess that's
how it is. So Pitchfork can be like, oh, it's okay, I guess.
Yeah, it's fine.
7.1.
So I kind of feel like you really have to wait for that feeling. And also, you know, like everybody who does creative stuff, we all know that terrifying feeling of like, you think you know what you're doing, and then suddenly you sit down and you're presented with this task that you feel fully unequipped for. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, that feeling of, is this a song that I want to listen to over and over again? Does it move me for a while? Sometimes it feels like it's the only thing you can count on. So I'm glad to have that feeling. But yeah, it can be very frustrating when you're just kind of like, you know, when you have like some okay songs, you know? Mm-hmm. It's the only thing you can count on.
Well, no, one thing I really like too is you have your Beats One show,
yeah.
Time Crisis. And I love the fact that Beats One shows are basically just sort of interspersed with songs that you pick.
Right.
You know, so it's nice to listen to something and hear a curated playlist from you.
Right.
Like, it's nice hearing what other artists are listening to.
Well, I gotta be honest, I don't pick every song on it.
Okay. Sometimes
the producers pick songs that have to go with it. But it's nice because we can really, that's a special thing about Beats, that you don't have to, you can play more of the songs than the 15-second legal whatever because of obviously the streaming service. Mm-hmm. But it so means, if we're talking about a song or we start thinking about a song, we can like kind of really get into it and kind of play it and stop it, you know?
It also made me realize that I've listened to the most recent one, that Foster the People has new music that is Pumped Up Kicks that I like.
Oh, that's nice.
Because
We had him on to talk about Jeffrey Epstein, but that's a good that's a good side effect.
Yeah, you did talk about Jeffrey Epstein with Mark Foster, Conspiracy Theories, which was a wild episode.
Yeah, it was atypical for us. But he had this tweet that went viral where he said he thought maybe... maybe Jeffrey Epstein was alive in Saudi Arabia. And, you know, I consider myself open-minded somewhere.
Sure.
and actually,
what a liberal thought.
Yeah. And so I was like, I want to hear what he has to say. And I always really like Mark. I think he's a very smart guy. And then, you know, when he gets on the show, as you might expect, he wasn't like foaming at the mouth, like, I'm telling you, he's alive in Saudi Arabia. He was kind of like, he's like, listen, I think there's a lot that we don't know. And I think weird stuff happens all the time. And I'm not saying it's true, but, you know, he was very reasonable.
I think that when you see something in a tweet like that, you assume someone's going to be Alex Jonesy.
Right.
But just listening to it and the casual nature of it,
yeah.
it just sort of reminds you that we can be hanging with any of our friends. And sometimes they'll say something like, you know, I don't really think the towers fell down. And you're like, what?
Who are you?
And they just say it casually.
Yeah. Was your friend Marianne Cotillard?
Yes. And, you know, she believes it.
That's right, yes.
Mark Ruffalo does, too.
Oh, I forgot all
Wait,
about
Wait, really?
That.
Yeah, he thinks it was like a inside job.
What?
Yeah.
Ruffies?
Wow.
No one's ever called him
He
that
was
before.
Pretty flawfully free, other than that, though. You can count on me. I recommend it, everybody.
But how that tweet blew up, I mean, you're a person who's on Twitter.
Less and less, but yeah, I have a Twitter account.
I mean, how do you feel about being on Twitter in general now?
I, you know what's interesting? I tweet so little now and I look at Twitter less. And it's not because I'm above it all. It's because Instagram allows me to check something over and over again, mm-hmm. and it ruins my day slightly less. That's how I feel. I think for me, I had to think backwards to kind of figure out, well, like, what's the moment when I stopped tweeting as much? And I think it was kind of around the time of the last election. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was like specifically when Trump was elected. Mm-hmm. I think I just kind of felt like
Twitter became hell.
Yeah. It's certainly not an original thought on my part. Like, but yeah, I think a lot of people felt that way. And I think some people probably felt, I could imagine why staying on Twitter might make somebody feel more in control or something. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was kind of just like, the infighting. Mm-hmm. I just felt like it was kind of clouding my mind in terms of how I thought about things. So, and then I also just started using Instagram more. So it's like, I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I feel like now I get my news a little more slowly from other places. And then Instagram fills that kind of compulsive checking habit.
I'm obsessed with Instagram stories.
Yes,
sometimes I am.
I am sometimes as well. I'm skeptical.
No, but I'm crafting them. I feel like my Instagram story feed is HBO Max.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's interesting.
I got to follow you on Instagram. I also really like that too, because I do think some people treat Instagram stories as an art form, mm-hmm. where you really feel like, you know, that like kind of famous clip in Rules of Attraction when a guy gets back from Europe.
Yes.
And
yes.
I like when somebody's Instagram stories are like that, where you're like. It's like, oh man, you just like took it all in. And I also like that Instagram stories like come and go.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's something about, and I think like Twitter can sometimes feel like high stakes.
Oh mm-hmm. yeah.
So I like that you're kind of just like watching this like fluid thing that comes and goes in 24 hours. And
right. If you upload like yourself at a bar and you're drunk, it is gone in a day.
Gone in a day.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, don't get too comfortable.
But, you can take screenshots. But Instagram's going to go away at some point soon, right? I mean,
it doesn't feel like there's much of a challenger, but you're right. There must be.
There
at
has
some point.
TikTok.
My only thing about Instagram is I am just shocked how you learn so quickly how many of your friends are willing to bore you.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? It's like,
I thought you were entertaining, and now I'm watching this, and you suck.
Well, your Instagram stories, by the way, are my favorite.
Oh, no, I do
when,
very well.
When Lewis takes on something, Ezra, I don't know if you follow this guy, but it's incredible.
I just answer questions about the people on the wall behind you.
I got some new Instagram managers.
Sometimes I will judge people who are like just sitting there answering questions like a Q&A, but I will admit, every time I see Lewis do one, I will maybe roll my eyes, but then I will sit there and watch the entire
episode. There's actual information in it.
Because it's information, and I'm getting to learn something new about you. And I try and treat mine like, it feels like a blog in a sort of sense. And it feels like there's more control over that than Twitter.
It's your live journal.
If you're sharing those thoughts like answering a Q&A on Instagram story, you're not getting people responding to your tweets and being like, fuck you, I hate that movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I also had a thought recently that something, because I would, sometimes I go on Twitter, you know, like sometimes you might see somebody like fave a tweet of yours from, again, 10 years ago, like psychotically. Yeah. So I had a bunch. And people, so I noticed people like fave. So I saw this one where I just wrote something about, I'm watching Chariots of Fire and wearing Patagonia. And I was thinking, I was really glad that I had some evidence that I was wearing Patagonia a little bit before it was cool. But also, I realized that, remember on Twitter that people used to like, when people made fun of Twitter before it became part of like the mechanics of society, the joke would always be like, I don't care what you had for breakfast.
Right.
And, yeah.
But then I was thinking back and I was like, that was really bad that people said that, because suddenly it was telling everybody, you can't just use this thing just to write down little details of your day.
Right.
You have to have like strong opinions. Like, what are you, some kind of loser who just gonna? But then when you go back and find those old tweets, and I think it's similar to Instagram, that feels like more archaeological when I find those old tweets where I'm just like, I'm sitting around doing this versus the ones where I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, like trying to make a joke or trying to like have
hot
some commentary
on,
or something.
Yeah.
There's part of me that kind of missed that. Like what I just had for breakfast Twitter. Maybe we got to bring that back.
Yeah. Well, standing in line at Starbucks Twitter.
I love that.
I mean, speaking of Kim earlier, I remember how she used to start every morning with good morning tweets. Kardashian did. Hi to her Twitter followers.
I think nothing is creepier than telling your followers good night. Signing off. I've been here for 13 hours.
Yeah.
Roxanne Gay has been. Shifting a bit, during the election, you were performing at like Bernie Sanders rallies and things.
We did
and,
a few.
Is he your person now? How are you feeling about the 2020 race?
Well, yeah, still like Bernie, and maybe we'll go out and do something for him. That's another thing. Yeah, primaries Twitter, that's
oh, God, primaries Twitter.
Ugh. It's pretty tough.
Yeah.
I thought it was exhausting when it was just two people. Well, three people. I forget about O'Malley. and now it's so many people.
Yeah. Right.
And everyone on every side seems exhausted.
Yeah.
You say, I really like Elizabeth Warren. And they're like, well, why don't you like these three other people?
Right.
How many photo collages of Tulsi can I tweet?
I tweeted something about, I'm from Texas, I love Beto. Mm. And I said something like, oh, you know, like just seeing Beto and seeing Julian Castro up there, it'd be amazing if one of them would run for Senate. And I got all this hate from Beto people who were like, he needs to be president, Grace. Shut the fuck up if you don't think that.
Oh,
Beto.
Yeah.
It's like, I think
Yeah.
And I was like, this is an amazing person who definitely needs to be in public service. I'm not saying the
I thought that was
here.
Like the common opinion was that he should be running for Senate instead.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the stuff. I don't like to see that.
Exactly.
Stuff. But I like Bernie. It's a head scratcher for me when people just like absolutely hate him. Mm. That's always strange for me because he clearly inspires very strong feelings. I'm just kind of like,
I feel like I used to have very strong feelings in 2016 and like a really like hotbed sort of pressure cooker way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now I see him, I'm like, I like his ideas.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you like somebody's ideas and they've been in the Senate and Congress for a long time without voting for too many things that you find morally repugnant,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to me, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah.
And I guess you could say the same thing about Warren, too. Like, you know, whatever people say, oh, she used to be a Republican. But, you know, in her time as a lawmaker, mm-hmm. she's got a pretty good record. So I try, and of course, I think everybody's on the same page. Just hope that somebody wins.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, one thing I can say is that I think the silver lining of 2016 was that Bernie's campaign probably led to good things. I mean, the fact that, you know, AOC cites him as a influence or mm-hmm. inspiration, however she puts it, seems like a good thing. So I kind of feel like Bernie's the type where you're kind of like, yeah, why not? Get out there for him. If he becomes president, good. If he doesn't, that's also fine. But yeah, it is scary.
I don't know if he has a corn pop, but you know, maybe.
Yeah, that's
a story that was. That's
the only one that really.
Whenever I go into West Hollywood, I run into my enemy, Fruit Loop. Always threatening to knife me.
Cinnamon Toast, yes.
I mean,
Lucky Charms.
Oh, I just. God.
I think we all agree that everyone's exhausted by Biden.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
That's the one thing everyone agrees with.
I also just kind of feel like if he's the candidate and he loses to Trump, I think the Democrats have to close up shop. I think we need to start some new party. I mean, maybe it has to finally be like in Europe where there's like a, you know, a socialist. Maybe that would be the final straw. People are like, this doesn't work.
The fall of the Democratic Empire.
I mean, how brutal is that going to be?
So,
right? Is that?
But maybe we're headed there.
I prefer not to have a heart attack right here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which will last longer, Instagram or the Democratic Party?
Oh, Instagram. Because Instagram, that's Zuckerberg, the answer to nobody.
Yeah.
The Democrats, come on.
That's true.
Thank you for writing the tagline for that.
To end on a positive note, who should we be listening to? Are there new artists that you're very into?
Oh, I mean, I'm always listening to old music. I find myself always kind of digging. Mm-hmm.
Well, tell people some old music to listen to.
Okay, sure. There was a country singer-songwriter named Mickey Newberry, and we covered one of his songs for the Japanese bonus track on our album. It's called I Don't Think Much About Her No More. And he wrote some, like, big country hits for other people, but it's one of those cool albums from, like, kind of the late 60s, early 70s, where you had some of these country guys, like, hanging out with hippies and wanting to make more, like, conceptual albums. So his music from that era is really great. And so the song "I Don't Think Much About Her No More" is a truly beautiful song. And he kind of adds in little like sound effects and these almost kind of Beach Boys-esque kind of musical flights of fancy. Mm. So I'd say check out the kind of late 60s, early 70s Mickey Newberry. Mm. He's kind of doesn't get as much credit as a artist because people knew him as a songwriter. So yeah, I've been really loving Mickey Newberry.
Great.
I love a flight of fancy too.
Oh yeah.
I'm on one right now. Yeah.
Ezra, thank you for being here.
Thanks Yay! So much for having me.
Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to, journalists, politicians, experts, comedians, and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vitor on, who may be our boss.
we still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vitor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that. I'm deeply stupid.
Doesn't sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Operation Varsity Blues. I still crack up every time I remember it is named that. Has just gotten its first sentencing, and just like the movie, it was weak and unsatisfying. Who wrote this copy? I love Varsity Blues.
I definitely don't, but okay.
You're up to it again, Carolyn.
All your Varsity Blues love should be moved over to Eurotrip.
Actually, I think I just love the "I Don't Want Your Life" scene and Allie Larder in the whipped cream, which is only actually made better in Not Another Teen Movie when Evans doing it.
That's right.
Maybe I don't love Varsity Blues.
Maybe you don't. You're learning a little bit about yourself today.
Fuck Varsity Blues.
It's best remembered as a quote from Mean Girls, I'll say it.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, Felicity Huffman was sentenced, as I said, to a fortnight in prison, plus 250 hours of community service and a $30,000 fine for her role in the infamous college admissions scandal that broke earlier this year. She has to turn herself in on October 25th, so she can still present at the Emmys.
Perfect. Not the Creative Arts Emmys.
No.
But the Emmys, she'll be there.
They should have her.
They should have her. They should have her. You know, this is a story where I can't tell which I'm longing for first, the documentary or the fictionalized version, the narrative story of this, because they both are going to be created about the same time. I mean, they're both in the same timeline.
Yeah.
But I don't know which is going to happen first. And I'm ready for both. I know that.
Well, also, we still have to wait for Lori Loughlin to officially go down. And that's going to be a much more serious situation since she didn't take the plea deal. And which is, LOL. What were you thinking?
What was she thinking?
I don't know what Lori's up to.
Yeah.
Do they have the same defense? No, right?
I don't think so.
I also think her and her husband, Massimo, were up to other illegal activities.
Yes,
so
for sure.
They got a lot going on.
They got a lot going on.
Quinn Cummings, the actress, tweeted once that when, this is from her Twitter, she said that when Lori Loughlin was on Full House and she and John Stamos were going to have a baby, that she screamed that the babies were too ugly and that she and John would never have ugly kids. So that is very funny.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Remember when they lived in a fucking attic and raise their kids?
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, very weird. Obviously, Felicity Huffman's sentencing is very light, but it also brought to mind the harsher sentencing, you know, that women of color get for committing some of the same crimes.
Mm-hmm.
There was the case of Tanya McDowell, a Connecticut mom who was sentenced to 5 years behind bars for, quote-unquote, stealing an education. After enrolling her 5-year-old son into the wrong school district, and that was because she was homeless at the time of his enrollment and used the address of her son's babysitter to enroll him in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to say something about this. It's fucked up that Tanya got 5 years in prison,
yeah.
Right? But a lot of the conversation online was, let's send Felicity to prison for 5 years, you know? And I think that two things can be true. Tanya's sentencing was bullshit. And also, we shouldn't be sending people to prison for crimes like this.
Yes.
Prisons are already overcrowded. And I don't really believe in using the prison system to punish people for crimes like this in the first place.
Yeah.
So prison reform is something that we need in this situation so that both women would have gotten fair sentences.
14 days in jail, by the way, though. I just don't know if it's enough to overhaul your conscience altogether.
You know what that is? That's preparing for a role.
Yeah, right.
That's
she's, yeah, planning her next move.
Yeah, exactly.
She is going to come out of prison and play Martha Stewart in a film.
Oh, wow.
I've got the role. I understand it. Cast me.
But to Ira's point, and to your point too, Lewis, I think 14 days is nothing for sure. Mm-hmm. But jail is not the proper
punishment. No. I really think the money is what we need from her. Her money should be going towards other students who didn't benefit from the scamming that she did to get her children into college.
And her daughter should have been sentenced to go to state school.
Because I think she was only fined $30,000.
To DeVry.
That's right. Yeah.
I think she was only fined $30,000,
which is
nothing for her, I'm sure. And
$30,000, that's less than a script fee.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It is,
yeah. She got paid more than that to be addicted to pills on one episode of Desperate Housewives.
An early season, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Her
yeah.
Emmy-winning season.
Was it season one?
I think she won for season one.
Really?
I disagree. I think it's season two because that's when all of them were nominated. And in the first season, it was fewer of them.
Her cancer season.
Yes.
Season two.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, okay. Wasn't Terry just nominated for the first season?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yes. By the way, the best part about this was the letters written for Felicity.
Oh, I know, including Eva Longoria.
That's right.
Yeah. Eva Longoria and Mark Cherry wrote letters in her defense. And Eva Longoria's letter defending Felicity while also mentioning how much she thinks another cast member was absolutely evil to her. So she used Felicity Huffman's defense to drag a former castmate.
Who was the castmate?
Well, I believe it was Terry Hatcher.
Mm, drama.
Yeah.
Though you couldn't really tell, right?
Yes, but from everything I've heard about the show, just the specifics seemed like it was about Terry Hatcher. People hated Nicolette Sheridan as well, but mm-hmm. I don't think that letter and the timing matched her.
That mm-hmm. makes sense, yeah. And Marcia Cross, that seems wrong.
Yeah.
Seems wrong.
I'm an actress detective. You can trust my instincts on that.
Yes. Plus, we have a mutual friend who worked on Desperate Housewives, and they said that Marcia Cross and Kyle MacLachlan were very nice to the writers and visited all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So
that means everything.
Yeah, Marcia Cross. Also, Marcia Cross, I saw her when I snuck into that Marianne Williamson fundraiser. So, she doesn't seem like the kind of person who's
she was there,
terrorizing
though?
People. Yeah.
Of course she was there.
Yeah.
Actually, I buy that.
From Quantico to... I don't know. Flights of fancy.
A lot of flights of fancy. I do love a flight of fancy.
We are footloose and fancy free today. But the scamming makes me think of the beautiful scammers of Hustlers.
Oh.
Which
okay, I
we
have
talked
to admit,
about last week after we had seen early screenings. But now it's out and... Everyone
hit.
Should have seen it. It's
now,
a hit.
I am going to see it this weekend. Mm. I apologize. I haven't seen it yet. But
well, we're not
going to
spoil the movie for people.
That's fine. You can tell me everything. I'll just still watch with love and adoration all these women, especially J-Lo. I love J-Lo. My love for J-Lo goes way back. I don't know how many other young Latina girls out there will feel the same way, but until J-Lo played Selena in that 1997 movie, there wasn't a beautiful, sexy Latina that we all saw. And it was life-changing. And I don't know that she knows how much of a cultural impact that she really had, but I think about that
all
the time.
You had Natalie Wood.
You know what? I did think that West Side Story was my favorite movie ever.
Same. I used to watch that all the time.
Oh, my God, all the time.
And when I found out that Natalie Wood was just white, I was like, oh.
She's like a little Russian, but still, same. Same. I'm like, oh, God. I had that exact same thought. There was nobody from Natalie.
Chino.
Chino.
What I will say about Jennifer Lopez is, even though in Selena she gives a very charming performance that really holds up. When you watch Hustlers, it takes you no time at all to realize it's her best performance.
Really? Yeah. That makes me really excited.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Also, by the way, happy National Hispanic Heritage Month.
Oh.
So J-Lo is like, yes. J-Lo is like, she deserves to be, she's also like just working so hard. I feel like she's somebody that's been hustling for decades. I'm really excited about the prospect of her performing at the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Who will she do Feeling So Good with?
Mm.
That's my favorite J-Lo song, by the way. Is that a weird take?
No. Feeling So Good is great. I would go with that. I would go with Get Right. I would go with I'm Glad.
The saxophone that keeps playing sounds a little bit like A Dying Cat to me. Mm. But I do think the song, the video slays.
I have a friend who was a gymnast, a college gymnast, and her floor song used to be Let's Get Loud.
Oh, sure.
Great, right? Now I can only see that as a gymnast floor song.
All the On the Six singles are amazing as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
I mean, it's her first one, but like If You Had My Love is still an iconic song.
Here's a question I have about If You Had My Love. Is she singing on the chorus?
No.
It sounds to me like the demo.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of her songs have Christina Milian and Ashanti singing hooks.
Right.
So.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh,
I love that, actually. I do love that.
She's been acting forever. What was great, too, about the movie is it really actually fulfilled Hollywood's too often oversold promise of female empowerment in movies. It was a film which had a huge female cast, and they all mostly had something to do.
Yeah. Julia Stiles, too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Julia Stiles does what she has to do.
Sure.
Okay. She does what was required in the script. now, she's very enjoyable. Roxane Gay thinks Constance Wu needs to work on her craft, but I did not mind her.
That's so interesting, because I thought she was good.
I thought she was fine, it's hard because she was opposite J-Lo, who was just massive in the film. So everyone was overshadowed by J-Lo.
Right.
My only quibble with the movie is, actually, I think it could have done... I would have liked it even better with less of the friendship component. If it was just hustlers using each other to get ahead and there wasn't necessarily a sentimental vibe. Like, I felt like I kept hearing script notes of, like, we have to see them hang out and enjoy a holiday together.
Less sisterhood of the traveling pants.
Like, what? Can't women just be soulless, goddammit?
Yeah. That's
what I want.
I like Lorraine Scafaria's work.
Yeah, me too.
In the film, but it did feel like, you know, if it were Soderbergh or a Scorsese making this film, there wouldn't be so much on their hanging out, like having Christmas dinner together.
A montage of all the times we really were there for each other.
Right. I felt like the only time it really hits is towards the end. There's a montage of their friendship. And I was like, I don't need this. I just saw the movie.
Just answer me this. Is there a point in this movie where two or more women are sitting in a tub talking to each other?
Oh, no. This isn't like Captain Corelli's Mandolin.
Okay, thank God. Because
two women sit in J-Lo's fur and talk to each other.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Which, as you're watching it, is both iconic and wild.
I'm trying to imagine staging that in like theater.
And
it would look awkward seeing the
Hustlers
actress
the
actually
stage
too.
Show?
Yes. I mean, it feels very, there's a lot of very good blocking in it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I love
how's
blocking.
The choreo?
Yeah. J-Lo.
Oh, when you see J-Lo's big choreography scene.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some
great.
Of her best dancing, period, I would say.
Speaking of Hustlers, what are some of your other favorite movies starring women?
Oh, starring ladies.
Yeah, they're not sitting in tubs.
First Wives Club.
Sure.
I love Bridesmaids. I mean, I'm thinking about this note of like, you know, movies where there are a lot of strong women who are also kind of forcing the agenda of friendship. And Bridesmaids, I think it's a pretty flawless movie for me, even though that agenda of friendship is definitely
present.
Do you
know what's interesting though? My favorite part of that movie, aside from the big plane sequence, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning of that movie, before they get to the plot, the scenes with Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph when they're like scamming a yoga class and chilling out together. It just feels an immediately lived in, funny, a little bit pathetic friendship.
Yeah.
I love that. Like that they're a little bit too old to be scamming a yoga class, you know? So I that part of the film, I think is better done there than in Hustler.
Well, I like that too, in that they're friends in Bridesmaids and it becomes about competing for a friend.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it turns like the friendship on its head. It makes it interesting.
Yeah.
I would say, of course, one of my favorites is the women.
I was just going to say the women. I thought that was going to be my cool contribution. Go ahead.
I mean, like, but you know, that's my kind of movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a movie from the 30s, directed by George Cukor, who understood ladies all too well. So I don't know what we don't know about George Cukor. Moving on.
I mean, you know, I love a melodrama. You know, I love a George Cukor movie.
Yes.
Him or Cirque, I could just sit down and watch all of their movies.
But the women is only women in the cast, and they're pretty much all icons. You've got your Joan Fontaines in there, Rosalind Russell, Norma Shearer, but it's really funny. Joan Crawford's in there.
Who has one of my favorite lines in cinema, which is when she confronts the other women, she says, there's a name for ladies like you, but it isn't used in high society outside of a kennel.
There's also a fashion show in that movie.
Yes.
Oh, there's a fashion show. I need to watch it.
Yes.
I would add A League of Their Own, of course.
Yes. Of course.
There's a horrible remake of The Women. Stay away from it.
Do not speak of that.
Who's in that one?
Meg Ryan. Jada Pinkett. Someone must have forced her by gunpoint to be in it. but also Set It Off, which I heard is maybe being remade by Issa Rae. I have concerns, but I'll continue.
Ocean's 8. How do we feel about Ocean's 8?
I felt it was sleepier than it needed to be, and it's the only movie I've ever seen where Cate Blanchett had nothing to do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and Where'd You Go, Bernadette? She at least had somewhere to go.
That's right. Antarctica.
I would actually say that Ocean's 8 is a movie that I didn't love when I saw it that much, but it's been a movie that I've rewatched every time I've been on a plane.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. It had cute moments in it.
It's enjoyable.
Particularly for Anne Hathaway.
I do watch that one.
It's enjoyable. Do you know...
I will just reiterate quickly that my favorite female friendship in a movie is Cate Blanchett and Sarah Paulson and Carol. They have a scene where they just sit and she's like... And Sarah Paulson says to Carol, tell me you know what you're doing, romancing this younger woman. And Cate Blanchett laughs and she goes... No, and she goes, no, I never did. And it's like really sad and meaningful moment shared between the two of them. You can always rewatch that movie, not just at Christmas time.
I'd be reticent to not mention Bring It On, even though we mentioned it before. But, you know, I think Kirsten and Gabrielle are so good in that.
Right.
And speaking of classic actresses, you know what movie I'm talking about, Lewis? Ginger Rogers, Katharine Hepburn, Lucille Ball. Eve Arden.
Oh, my God.
Stage Door.
Yes. Wow, you're a Stage Door queen. I do see that.
Yeah. I mean, it's about actresses trying to make it.
Right.
This was Lucille Ball.
Yeah, it's like the 30s.
Lucille Ball's movie career, for the most part, is pathetic. Mm-hmm. If you look, she's like on a magic carpet in one of them. Anyway, it took her a long time to become Lucy. But yes.
Yeah. Yeah, 37.
Wow.
So it is a great movie. People should watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I like when I become the classic film girl.
No, right. I enjoy it myself. Yes, it's pleasant.
No, oh, thank you.
Which I would rarely use to describe you. But
yeah. I'd like to be remembered as a bitch. But a loyal bitch and a hardworking bitch. It's a Naomi Campbell interview.
Oh,
from what?
News to me.
It's an interview with Barbara Walters. I will send it to you.
Yes, send it to me. Love it, love it, love it.
And when we're back, keep it. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode, Keep It. Grace.
Keep it, baby.
Your very first Keep
It. My very first Keep It. Okay, so my very first Keep It is to the New England Patriots, to the NFL, to CBS Sports, and to Antonio Brown this week.
Mm.
Because, as you guys know, Antonio Brown was accused of assault and of rape. This is a story that has gotten a lot of attention, but not nearly as much attention as I think it should have been getting. And more specifically, it was not enough attention to actually pull Antonio Brown from his first game as a New England Patriot. So this last Sunday, despite all the allegations, he played. He did very well. The Patriots won against the Dolphins 43-0. And the whole time I was thinking, are we not discussing this story? And how is it that my boyfriend and his family are big Patriots fans, and all of us were just sitting there like, we're cheering this guy, and it feels very strange. It feels very odd, and it should not have gotten to this place. He should have been suspended, I believe. He should have, I understand due process, and I respect that by all means. I hope this isn't too serious of a Keep It.
No, but this is what we do.
I love that. It's very jarring as a fan. And by the way, I've mentioned this before, I'm from Texas. I like football. I enjoy watching football. I enjoy the sport. I think think it's fun. It sucks when you have players for teams that you want to root for. I'm not saying that all players are like this by any means, but you have an Antonio Brown, and he's somebody that I don't think should be playing. And I, again, understand due process, but I think let's listen to Brittany Taylor, the woman who told this story. Let's figure out, she didn't even meet, by the way, with the NFL until Monday, until after that game. It's like they desperately wanted to play Antonio Brown in this game, just to prove that he was going to do well with the Patriots. He'd gotten traded from the Raiders the week before. Anyway, all this is to say, like, as a woman who really enjoys football, I want to continue to like the NFL. I want to continue to make it a part of my Sundays. I think it's entertaining for sure, but I can't do it when everybody institutionally is denying these women their right to speak about these stories and for there to be some sort of consequence. Consequence culture needs to exist in sports as well, is what I'm saying. We hear a lot about it with entertainment. We hear a lot about it with politics, but we don't with sports.
I saw the video of when he was released from his last team and he like celebrated and sprinted away or whatever. It's, I mean, like, we're supposed to actually be celebrating this person.
Yeah,
it's
we
strange.
Are. Mm-hmm. And there are elements.
I was so disappointed too, because I was really happy to hear that he'd used the word cracker. Because people should use that word more. It's such a hilarious word.
It's hilarious.
And I loved white people getting upset about it, being like, this is a slur. Which also, the same white people who get upset with you even saying the phrase white people are the people defending Shea Gillis's right to be offensive.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Which is it?
and you know, that's interesting too, because the cracker comment is akin with some of the other more quirky things that he's proven over the past few years, one of which is getting his feet cryogenically frozen, hysterical. Mm-hmm. The whole helmet thing, that's funny. I'll laugh along with that. But then you get into sexual assault, I can't
there
anymore.
Does seem to be a line. Yeah.
Yes, there's a line. I think that's that line. So NFL, make it easy for us. If there are players out there that are under any sort of investigation like this, investigate them off the field. Don't put them on the field until we know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. You know what my favorite Patriots moment is? And I'm not talking about the ball scandal.
Deflategate?
Deflategate. The 2008 Super Bowl, a friend was from New England. She was crazed for the Patriots. They lost to the Giants. And she left the room to sob in the kitchen. And it was so funny.
Sports really brings people to
really
a vulnerable place.
Truly does. Truly does. Wow. I thought you were going to mention something about Tom Brady.
Was crying like me when Buffy sent Angel to hell. I was like, girl, come on. They'll be back next season. I didn't know if Angel was coming back. Anyway, Lewis, what's your keep it?
Mini keep it, first of all, to the fact that NBC's new streaming service, Peacock, which is notably called Peacock.
I hope the Katy Perry song is its theme.
Oh, God. Or at least Mrs. Peacock, like Eileen Brennan as Mrs. Peacock is the new icon. Something that'll be on that streaming service is a Saved by the Bell reboot that's centered around Elizabeth Berkley and Mario Lopez. Mm-hmm. First of all,
trans activist.
Oh yeah,
Mario Lopez.
Yeah. I keep forgetting about that he said that. Anyway, those are the two least interesting cast members on that show, and I am including Screech.
By far, sorry
to say that.
I love Elizabeth Berkley. She was great in Showgirls, and I think she's actually
she's
an underrated
cool person.
I think she's a cool
like
person
her.
And an underrated actress.
Yeah.
But her most memorable part on Saved by the Bell is when she was addicted to pills.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You know, she just never got to be that funny, whatever. Especially since Lark Voorhees was so funny on that show. If we could do something with the Lisa Turtle universe, I would be excited about
that. I don't think Lark Voorhees looks like Lark Voorhees anymore.
A little bit out of commission as far as I know.
Yes, yes.
But anyway.
I only want to see Zach and Kelly.
I guess.
I mean, Mark Paul Gosselaar and Timmy Thiessen are the best actors on the show.
That feels like an obvious reboot. Why is that not happening?
Well, what's interesting is... I feel like only Mario Lopez and Elizabeth Berkley are attached at the moment, but the plot of the reboot is Zach Morris is governor of California, and he's closed a lot of low-income schools, and to fix the backlash, they bus all the kids from the canceled low-income schools into Bayside High.
So it's a story about busing.
And it's, yes, and hilarity ensuing when people from different classes and races have to interact.
So it's the neighborhood, but in high school.
Wow.
Kamala Harris. She was that girl who had to go to Bayside.
So they're in talks with Mark Paul Gosselaar about joining the show, too.
Okay.
But
we need Tiffany Amber, too.
Yeah.
It'd be funny if he didn't join, by the way, and then... Zach Morris was only seen with his chair facing the wall and just like shaking his
head. Oh, yeah.
Transfer those kids to Bayside.
And he looks like the dealer in Deal or No Deal. Yeah. And then additionally, my other keep it this week is to, this is in jest. You know, I love award shows. I believe awards are the only things that matter. It's a syndrome I have. But the Emmys are coming up. Not everybody can win the award you want them to win. And in fact, that's kind of what makes award shows great, right? Like, after all these years, you still want Glenn Close to get an Oscar, right? There's a suspense to these people finally being rewarded. Anyway, just a couple people who never got an Emmy that I'd like to shout out and say keep it to the Emmys. Number one, of course, Angela Lansbury, 18 losses in a row.
God.
I mean, Susan Lucci won on her 19th time. I'm just saying Angela Lansbury is in her late 200s now. She first started a movie in 1944. That's how serious her career is. So keep it to that. Keep it to one of my favorite all-time sitcom actresses who never won, Elizabeth Montgomery in Bewitched. Mm. Never gave it to Hugh Laurie. Never gave it to, who played Michael Scott? Sorry, Steve Carell. So anyway, just keep those on your mind this Sunday, and maybe somehow they'll win an honorary, et cetera, in the coming days.
Elizabeth Montgomery.
Fabulous. Yes. That role is still like subversive, but also a classic sitcom way.
Yeah.
No, I love it.
Bewitched is still a show that I can turn on.
Absolutely.
And
everyone's
to laugh
funny.
At.
Agnes Moorehead, Paul Lynde. Yes.
Mrs. Kravitz is one of the all-time hilarious characters. And Edna's great. I even liked Second Darren.
Oh, Dick Sargent.
Oh, yeah. Second Darren.
Noted homosexual, Dick Sargent.
Yes. The faggot jumped out.
Indeed. Right. To Antarctica because she cursed him and sent him there. That's more I Dream of Jeannie. Yeah.
I Dream of Jeannie. Very problematic, but also very funny.
Oh, very funny.
Yeah.
He is so gorgeous, Larry Hagman.
Barbara Billingsley ever win?
Barbara Eden? No.
Barbara Eden.
No.
Yes.
Nominated?
Why did I say Barbara Billingsley?
So, no. Yeah. Come on. Leave it to Beaver.
I'm a mess. I did watch every episode of Leave It to Beaver, too.
That's weird.
I was parked in front of Nick at night. And I was like, look at these neighborhoods. They look like they don't have any crime in them. Unlike mine. My keep it is to angry theater goers who saw Jeremy O'Harris's play, Slay Play, which is now on Broadway. Some people were upset that he held the curtain for Rihanna. Because she was running late to the show. And I'm sorry, I would hold my wedding if Rihanna texted me she was running late.
I would say you're staying up there for a few more minutes.
If I am dead and they're lowering the casket, I will rise out of it and say, you're not lowering this until Rihanna gets here. Jeremy tweeted, you know, she is his muse for the play. He recently interviewed her for Teen Magazine. Her song Work like opens the play, so not to spoil it, but she's basically his muse for the show. And he tweeted, when Dionysus is coming, you hold the curtain.
Some people belong in theater.
And then some people were mad that she was texting during the show too, but she texted him with feedback.
Oh,
in the moment, like live feedback?
Yes, live feedback.
What, is she like a dramaturg?
I would love Rihanna to start a career as a dramaturg.
That'd be incredible.
I've been researching this era. This crucible wouldn't work.
I was literally about to make a crucible joke.
Oh, perfect. Guys, simpatico. Synchronicity.
Someone had a very funny joke about why they don't mind young people using their phones during shows. And it's because it's always people over 40 who keep their ringers on.
Oh, right.
When young
you're
people
right.
text during a Broadway show, you'd never even notice.
Silent,
and the screen, the brightness is turned all the way down.
Yeah, that's right.
We know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Anyway, great.
You're clever.
Guys.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. This was
such a dream to have you here.
And thank you to Ezra Koenig for being here, too.
Who was amazing.
Yeah.
That's our show. Keep It is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadine Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.
Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to. Journalists, politicians, experts, comedians and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vietor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vietor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that. I'm deeply
stupid.
It doesn't
sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.